Welcome back, everybody, to the Reflex Blue Show. I am your host, Donovan Beery, still recording from the How Design Live in Atlanta, Georgia. And I have with me the IGA medalist and design legend, Kit Heinrichs. Kit, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just great. Thank you, Donovan.
So what are you speaking about here at How?
Well, I've been doing a series for SAPI for 7 years now. And this is the standard. And so this particular one on a different printing technique, design technique, has to do with binding.
Now, does this go with, I think last we spoke on the show was at the in Boston, and your 3 week long press check for, is that part of that same series?
It's part of that same series, yes. That probably was standard five, is my guess, is what that was.
And that had every printing technique all
just
all in
about
one book.
Absolutely. And it was a nice thing because it was all connected to 385 Valencia, which is a nonprofit that helps kind of kids, and it's put together by a group there in San Francisco. And we try to take what their wonderful, really their sites all around about eight different cities, and we took each one of those cities and the retail thing they have. They have like a pirate store and a rocket store and a Bigfoot store and so on. So we had a lot of fun being able to take that and put a different printing design and photographic technique to each one of those. So it was great.
And so what is the new one that you're pushing out here?
It's on binding because we've kind of alternated on these standards of being something. It was very practical guide to see how can designers do better in the work they do by understanding the industry better. And so this falls in that category as an educational piece, really about binding and how to use binding in a creative way.
Now, I know, like, you did, you know, and I saw your presentation on when you did, like, a paper folding. Mm-hmm. You guys brought in that lady
correct.
Who just did
yes.
a master's
she's
degree
great.
In paper
yeah,
folding.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I've never seen anyone.
Trisha, yeah.
Yeah, Trisha, so energetic and excited, and the crowd was just happy to see someone talking about. And it wasn't, like, origami folding. It was just regular paper folding.
Yes.
And so, like, that made sense. Like, it was bound, and there were samples of how everything's folded. Or then we talked about the SAPI 5, where right. you have every specialty printing their individual pages. How do you go about designing a book? Because how many times can you bind one project?
Well, it's not a matter of knowing about how to do one project. It's being aware of all the possibilities.
Well, that's so, what I mean. But like when you're doing the sample piece, you can't bind it 18
well,
days,
I had,
can you?
I have five different bindings within the book itself. So there's books within books.
Okay, that would
so
make
So some
sense.
Are stitched, some are saddle stitched, some are Wiro bound, some are perfect bound. It's an interesting set. Plus some big fold outs in the middle as well.
Now I gotta ask, since you've been designing for a while.
Yeah.
And so when you get a project like this, have you like either with the specialty printing or the binding, did all of a sudden you're like, I didn't even know this binding, how did I not know this binding existed?
Absolutely true. You learn something every time you do it. And so even though I have a lot of experience in doing this, I always learn something new. And for the folks who actually come to the little talk, they'll hear something really quite phenomenal in the world of binding that I wasn't aware of before. And it's a very interesting story.
Well, this is going to be launched month or so from now. So can you tell us?
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, together with the SAPI part of this, the educational part, in the process of going through this, I also found the Rubaiyat of Ober Khayyam, and everyone kind of knows that. It's a series of well over 1,000, I won't say Iranian, they're pretty Persian poems.
Okay.
And those poems have been collected for years. It's like 1,000 years old. And so one of the great bookbinders in England in the turn of the century, the last century, the 19th century, the 20th century, sorry, they had been commissioned to do an absolutely fabulous book, the most expensive book they could ever do. And
which is always a fun project,
always,
but I assume daunting.
Yes, at the same time, they just allowed them to do whatever they wanted to do. It was as special as that. And it had jewels in it. It had special hand-tooled leathers.
Was this like a one-off project?
It was a one-off project.
Okay.
So they did it. It was finished early part of the 20th century and was auctioned off in New York. And so they were going to send it to New York. They sent it to New York. It was in turn, customs turned it back in that they wanted to have money for it and the British weren't going to pay it, so they sent it back to England. So they found another buyer later, also in New York. So they put it on a ship going to New York, and of course, the ship happened to be the Titanic.
Oh.
So there's this book that was £1,000 and in today's world, about $68,000. This one-of-a-kind book goes to the bottom of the ocean.
Yes.
And 3 weeks after this, the guy who did it, he drowned. This is really one of those curses of something.
Wow.
So the next
thing
is...
These are not good poems.
These are... Well, I think up until that time, no one died because of it.
Okay.
And as about 25 years later or so, his surviving partner made another copy based on all the drawings and all the things they did. They made a complete replica of the same thing. And they thought...
This just sounds like asking for trouble.
Oh, it was one of those things because it happened again. They put it in a safe in London, and of course the Blitzkrieg came. London was bombed. Their shop was untouched, but the bank that they put the vault in was creamed. So they lost a second one, a complete one. These are thousands of dollars to put them together. And...
That's why you always print an extra copy that you don't need.
Not quite as simple as that.
Right.
So in this case, they actually had a third version done by his nephew, I believe. And it's now, they didn't ship it anywhere. They put it in the British Museum. So it's there permanently and can be viewed today.
Oh, because I was like, that's just asking for the museum to be...
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, the world isn't over yet. Things can happen.
Okay.
But it was an interesting story.
Okay, yeah, I think after like... that amount of time, if something happened to it, it's not the curse anymore. After like 80 years, it's okay.
That's right.
Wow. So have you seen this copy or is it just...
No, I've seen photographs of it. I have not been to the museum to see it.
Okay.
But the photographs and the stories are so fabulous about it. I mean, they've got certainly dozens of different kinds of exotic leathers that are built into it, and the jewels and the gold leaf. It's just an amazing story.
So if anybody wants to go and see the book you did on binding,
yes.
And Sappy's giving it out.
Yes, so and you could write Sappy for it. They would send you a copy.
Sappy will send you a copy. Is this information like online anywhere as well?
I think it would really be going to Sappy, and they would have it online, and you'd be able to order it online within their promotions. Yeah, okay. You can do that.
Well, I'll look for it. Hopefully I can snag one while I'm here.
But oh, I'm sure you'll be able to.
All right.
Well, you know, if you came to my talk, you'd be able to get one free.
I may show up to your talk. You never know. All right. We'll be right back with Kit Heinrich. So Kit, you're now at Studio Heinrichs.
Correct.
Last we spoke to you, you just went out on your own. And how's Studio Heinrichs going?
It's great. It's been 7 years now since I left Pentagram.
Has it been?
It has been. It's hard to believe. It seems like it's only yesterday, but I know it's been that long.
And you were there a while.
I was 23 years there.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's like, gee, you're leaving your mother at that point. But it was the right time. If I'm still going to do something different in my life, I might as well do it while I'm still... healthy and upright to be able to do it, and it's been terrific ever since.
And you're still in San Francisco?
Still in San Francisco, now into Presidio, which is a special spot on the tip of San Francisco, and I get to view the Golden Gate Bridge every day out of my window. So
that's not a
terrible.
Bad view.
Not bad view.
You know, I've got this, we moved offices like 7 years ago, and before we were kind of on top of the hill and we had kind of a nice view. The office I'm at now I like more, but it's ground level, and we look at a parking lot. And then we see like a warehouse-ish building.
I see. Well, so it depends on the cars that pull in. Then I guess it makes the view more interesting.
No. The other day, though, there was this truck that was hauling gigantic tires that pulled in. And that was the most interesting vehicle I've seen in the parking lot. But every now and then there's semis because they just show up to the loading bay. But nothing. Our view is not the Golden Gate Bridge. But, I mean, I could maybe do a printout and just tape it over the window.
There's always that, yes.
Yeah, at least there's a nice tree out front, but it's no Golden Gate Bridge view.
That's great. Well, San Francisco has a lot of those kind of views.
So what are you guys working on right now?
In many ways, I'm doing the same stuff I was doing as part of Pentagram. I'm just not making quite as much money doing it.
Sure.
It's nice to be able to kind of pick and choose the jobs I want to do. I don't have to worry as much about saying, well, am I sure I'm making my numbers for the quarter or for the year. And I just got to pick things I want to do. So I've been doing a lot more probably nonprofit projects. Did a lot of things in San Francisco for the Parks Department, for Golden Gate National Recreation Area. But I'm also doing a lot of educational work. I'm doing a project in Saudi Arabia for a college there, university, that needed some outside help, and so we're working with them on it. I'm just doing a range of things, doing books, and a couple of books recently that are out. And the nice thing is I really kind of choose what I want to do, and I purposely just choose what I want to do, not just because, well, I make more money doing this particular work.
I think that's important.
Oh, yeah.
Because at the end, I mean, what we have is we have time.
That's right.
And if you're doing the stuff you want, it goes by better.
Absolutely. And you really enjoy going to work every day. And that's, I've never really called it work. I mean, I'm so fortunate to be able to get paid for something I love to do.
Right. We ended up this year we were doing some projects and we did some brand for a Mexican restaurant and a guy that's selling natural pork in a restaurant, and then we're rebranding a vet, and I was like, and we got him up into my office, and I'm like, this year we spent our time on Mexican food, pork, and dogs, and I'm like, that's as happy as I can be. Like, that is
that's great.
I'm like, if that's what we're working on, I'm happy because those are my things.
Yes. And of course, I always have my flag collection bit, which has become really a whole other world.
So is your entire office just a giant American flag?
I try not to work in a museum, so it's really quite all right.
Oh, I'm at the outside, just paint the flag like every.
Well, the Presidio doesn't let you do that. But nice thing is I have exhibits in various places around the country. I've got one coming up in opening, and of course, on July 4th or July 2nd.
Yeah, you donated a huge chunk of your flag collection to like a museum.
No, to a foundation.
Oh, foundation.
Foundation, of which I'm the founder of the foundation.
And so, where do people go to find out about that? Do they have a website?
They would want to go online. It would be starsandstripes.org, I believe.
Okay.
Would get you there. But wait until at least June 14th, Flag Day, to be able to go there because we're still building it out.
Oh,
it's a relatively new thing that we're doing. But we do have exhibitions, and we have one opening up in Pennsylvania in Doylestown at the Mercer Museum on the 2nd of July. And so we'll be there a week before installing it. So anybody wants to come by and say hello, feel free.
And it's not only American flags, but it's a lot of flag paraphernalia, right?
That's correct.
Like, because I think you have like brooches and you have like...
I've got all kinds of things. Pins, I've got Navajo weavings, I've got quilts. It's all kind of Stars and Stripes related, and primarily from the Civil War through the Second World War. And so there's a lot of great examples in there.
Is there a reason for that time period? Is it because it's harder to find things before that?
Not that there's nothing before then, but not much before the Civil War. And at that point, it kind of exploded. There were just lots and lots, partially because here we are trying to define which side of the Mason-Dixon line we're on and what we're actually after. So there were a lot of flags created by the people of this country. So it's been, and that kind of started it as far as being owned by the people and doing that. So it's been a great experience to kind of find a group of people, a population of a country who kind of defined their own icon and just made it themselves.
So we actually moved like a year ago, houses personal.
Right.
We put up a flagpole like 2 months ago.
Oh, good
so
for you.
So we've been putting a flag
good
out.
Good for you.
Put it out most mornings unless we know it's going to rain like crazy or something, then we leave it in. But I originally did it so I could hang up my Denver Broncos flag to celebrate the Super Bowl win. But it was cheaper to buy Made in the USA flag with the flagpole at Costco than to just buy a flagpole. So
I believe that.
I'm like, I can only really put up the Denver Broncos flag on game days.
Game day, yeah.
And it hasn't been game day or preseason yet for a while, so we've been hanging up the American flag almost daily.
Well, I'm glad to see that.
Yeah.
It's great to see it. I love seeing it out there. Not for any super patriotic thing. It's just something I think it's something that belongs to all of us in this country.
Yeah, and I got my the only other flag we have other than this one is I got my grandpa's 48 star flag.
Okay, good.
And he probably had it since the war. And so I'm going to hang it up on Flag Day, I think. Swap it out. So it's going to be a little fun.
The origin of my collection actually comes from a great-great-great-aunt from 1865, just at the end of the Civil War, who hand-sewed a 36-star flag, and that's cornerstone of my collection. And then now has somewhere 5,000 objects in it. And it's
when you make a foundation for your collection, then it's more than three or four items.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's really it's been something that I think part of the reason I still work is I like to be able to still buy them because it's something that I feel like I'm the kind of custodian of those for a while until someone else picks them up.
Now, when you collect like that, is it hard to find new pieces, or are there just so many that it?
Well, there are so many manufactured ones, of course, you would get. But I like the one-of-a-kinds, or ones that have been manufactured but have some historical significance, or just interesting graphically. But the idea with looking at Navajo weavings and so on, they're just so unique. The interpretations of the Stars and Stripes has been fabulous.
Okay. And like, where do you find those? Like, where do you find a Navajo weaving of a flag?
Well, you go to New Mexico, you find lots of them. There is going to places where things are made, still made today, and some of them are 100, 150 years old. But I go to a lot of flea markets.
It is a good excuse to go to flea markets if you have any sort of collection.
Not that I need a whole lot of excuses.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
But it's even though I don't go online much for it, I do go online occasionally and find some quite unique pieces as well.
Okay. So starsandstripes.org, and you'll be on Flag Day in Pennsylvania.
Flag Day, it'll be up, but it won't be until Pennsylvania until July 2nd.
Until July 2nd.
Right.
All right. Well, we look forward to hearing more about that.
Great.
We'll be right back with Kit Heinrich. So I know that you're still doing your type, the 365 calendar.
That's correct.
And it's been a while. I think I had one back in 2003, probably.
Right, 2001 was actually the first one that came out. So it's been something that.
Now who's selling? Who? No, you.
Well, we produce them.
Okay.
And we sell them all across the country. You get them from Amazon.
Oh, they're now on Amazon.
You can get them on Amazon, absolutely.
It's a modern thing.
They
still come in two sizes?
They still come in the larger wall size and the desk size, okay. Although they're both can be used on the wall. And I think it was just something that I've always cared a lot about the education of about our community, about understanding our own community. And typography is such a mainstay of what we do every day.
And it turns out you can't put out written words without using letters.
It's one of those things, yes.
Yeah. Although you did do the one calendar where it was just typefaces that had only numbers.
Well,
did you do one year where
I did do one.
Numeric?
That was from Hofler, Tobias Jones. They had developed some developed some numbers, but they'd never done the full alphabet. And so I said, well, why don't I use it if you'll let me? And so they gave me the set of numbers, and I did a full calendar of those, which was really a joy. Really was a joy.
Yeah.
So, and I picked a face that was relatively close to work with it and the text that went along at the top. Because each one of those months in the calendar not only shows a practical calendar face, but also gives you a background to the designer who did it, the period of time they did it, even the technology that might have been used to do it.
Yeah, because it is one of those, if you know the history of a type, I think you can work better with it.
Absolutely.
And I'll probably be the first to admit I don't know as much history on type as I should, but I assume it's like cooking where if you understand, I just read somewhere that you should read about the spice trade because if you understand where spices come from, you know what type of food the spices taste right on.
Right. No, that's an excellent analogy. I can't help but think that the more we know about typography and the emotional value of typography, because it's sometimes used primarily during a certain period of time, and we begin to think of what that era was like with the typography that was used in it, and so we begin to kind of understand that emotional value and the time frame in which it was done. So that's been great.
And is this one of those things where you're like, the more you work on it, you're like, I know less about type than I thought?
I'm afraid that's true. Obviously, there are thousands of faces, and every day there are more faces added because of the ability to create a typeface on a computer. So, and they're still mostly junk, but there's also interesting things too. I mean, there's sometimes when I'll pick a face that is something that I don't actually like the face, but the numbers are fabulous. And so I'll be choosing it because of the numbers. And so finding a face that actually is as good typographically in the letter forms as it is in the numbers is not always as easy as it seems.
Now, the 365 calendar, every month is a different typeface.
That's correct.
Have you repeated ever over the last 15 years?
We try not to, but there are different cuts of certain faces. Futura
right.
has different cuts. Certainly, Bodoni has multiple cuts. And so sometimes it may just be a different weight of the same typeface. But most of the time, we're picking new typefaces.
Has there been any typeface where you started, where you were like, I don't like it, but all of a sudden, because you're running out, you use it, and then you're like, oh, no, this actually has some good use? Has any of them grown because of it?
I go through actually a relatively rigorous process to go through and check the typefaces and compare them. So I'll have 30 to 50 faces that I'll choose to look at, and we'll set them in the month. So we look at the set, and then we'll pull some out and see, just like we would do a book, there's the pacing of the faces themselves from month to month. And we try and also orient it to, if it's summertime, maybe there's something, or Christmas, there's other holidays. We try and think a little bit about the typography to use during that time of the year.
So, yeah, this isn't just a pick 12 typefaces. This is a full – I should have expected nothing less.
No. I know sometimes when you see something and it is relatively simple at the end, you kind of go, oh, so what's the big deal?
Oh, no, that's a fallacy. I fully understand that part where things aren't simple by accident. If they're done well, it's not accidentally just simple most of the time.
Sometimes I've had help in that when I was a partner in Pentagram, I asked my partners to each select three different typefaces that they would if they were going to pick one, they would do.
Sure.
And then I got to pick from that series to be able to put them together and what months they would go on and also. But that was an interesting thing. So sometimes I'll talk to like Matthew Carter and just have only his typefaces for a calendar. So it's a mixture of things. And I never know from one year to the other. Sometimes they're all international designers who do it.
Sure.
Sometimes it's only not my friends, but people I know who are involved in the field, and I get their take on it. So it's an interesting thing. And, of course, my staff is also wonderful about being able to help. And, of course, they want to show their interest in type as well. So it's been fun.
No, and it's a great project. So I would recommend checking out the 365 calendar. Now, the other thing you're working on now, and you said you have two of these, is the Obsessions.
Right.
And where do people go to get these books? These are nice, by the way.
Well, thank you. I've always been interested in other things besides just what we do professionally. If I can just do a little transition from the calendar into the first Obsessions book, which was on Victorian alphabet cards. And in the process of searching for flags and flag memorabilia, you also find other things at postcard shows and so on. And Victorian alphabet cards was a great segue in the typographic world that we all deal in. But a very specific period of time and a specific style of typography and the integration of primarily photography but oftentimes illustration and typography into single alphabet cards. And so I collect full sets.
Okay.
And there are hundreds of them out there, hundreds of sets. So that's been an interesting little thing that's related to typography and design, linking the whole thing together.
And then the other one here, so when you decide, hey, I'm going to make this book on this obsession.
Well, it's because it is obsessions, because it's something that you really are kind of passionate about.
Yeah.
And
the idea is that each one of these will eventually be just, I mean, they're related in the fact that they're obsessions, but like the subject matter has no relationship between like one book to the other.
Except a period of time.
I
shouldn't say that. They are completely different. We've done two, as we've talked about. The third one may be on Tom Mix, a cowboy movie star from the 20s and 30s.
Okay.
Or it may be on, which we're looking at several, one may be a thing on men's, which is when, especially before the 1900s, people were out in the plains and they broke a saw handle. They couldn't just go down to the corner and get it from Home Depot. They had to order a way for it, or they fixed it in some way. And so these fixes are wonderful design projects. And so we have a series of interesting photographs.
Because design, its basic root is problem solving.
Absolutely.
And just being...
And it's interesting, really interesting.
And half of it isn't necessarily how to do it right, but it's how to do it with what you have.
And it's amazing what you can do, the ingenuity that's involved in that.
Yeah, and I assume once you fix your saw, if it's working, it doesn't matter how you fix it. You're like, well, it's still working.
Yeah. And the one in between, the one we've just finished, is on the art from the internment camps, Japanese internment camps in World War II from 1942 to 46. The writer who has worked with me for so many years, Delphine Hirasuna, we do this obsession series together.
Sure.
But she has a book that we've also designed on the art called The Art of Gammon. And it chronicles a lot of the art from the 10 different individual internment camps. But as she was in the process of gathering this material, and she did shows around the country, an international traveling show of this artwork, people began to give her more and more pieces along the way. So all of a sudden we have a whole other set of things that didn't get in the first book. So we did the second book, and it's loaded with all kinds of wonderful things, these bird pins which are on the cover. Inside there's a gatefold of a train made all out of things that they found at the camp, got watch parts and old tin cans and so on. Looks like it's a Lionel train. I mean, it is really a wonderful piece, and everything in between. So it's an emotional read because of the people who, what they were going through at the time, and understanding that basically their life has changed completely at that point. They cannot go back and just pick up where they left off.
No, this was a bad time.
Terrible time.
And I know like George Takei was involved. His family was put in one, and I know
absolutely true.
He's been writing a play about it and trying to remind people that this is what happens when we don't pay attention, and this can't happen again.
Yeah. And unfortunately, with the discussions we have now about the Muslim community, I worry about that every day.
Yeah. And so it is a reminder that, no, we tried something similar, and it was not wise.
Yeah. And it was illegal. It was un-American, all of these things. And yet it went ahead because there was a certain amount of prejudice in the world, and we'd just been bombed, and there was an overreaction to it.
Well, these books are gorgeous. They're the length where I don't think you could see this and not want to read it, because they look great, and they're also a length where these aren't like novels.
No.
But they're enough to, I guess if somebody picks one of these up, they're going to probably want to learn more, because
there's a lot to it. It whets people's appetite about the material that's actually in it. And I hope that they do. If they want to contact us, we do actually charge some money for them, because it costs us some money to produce them and to ship them out and do all those things. But if anyone's interested, they can contact me at kit@studio-heinrichs.com or go online and you'll find it.
Okay, well, Kit, we really appreciate your time. It was great talking to you.
Great talking to you.
Hopefully we'll catch you at the next party.
You got it. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kit.
The Reflex Blue Show with Donovan Beery is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dustlab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.